All the colors of sunset, rust reds and pale greens, changed ceaselessly in the long leaves as the wind blew. The roots of the willows, thick and ridged, were moss green down by the running water, which, like the wind, moved slowly with many soft eddies, held back by rocks, roots, hanging and fallen leaves. No way was clear, no light unbroken in the forest. Little paths ran under the branches, around the boles, over the roots. They did not go straight, but yielded to every obstacle, devious as nerves. The ground was not dry and solid, but damp and rather springy, product of the collaboration of living things with the long, elaborate death of leaves and trees. And from that rich graveyard grew 90-foot trees and tiny mushrooms that sprouted in circles half an inch across. The smell of the air was subtle and sweet. The view was never long unless looking up through the branches you caught sight of the stars. Nothing was pure, arid, plain. There was no seeing everything at once, no certainty. The colors of rust and sunset kept changing in the hanging leaves of the copper willows, and you could not say even whether the leaves of the willows were brownish red or reddish green or green. Selvar came up a path beside the water, going slowly and often stumbling on the willow roots. He saw an old man dreaming and stopped. The old man looked at him through the long willow leaves and saw him in his dreams. "May I come to your lodge, my lord dreamer? I've come a long way." The old man sat still. Presently Selvar squatted down on his heels just off the path beside the stream. His head drooped down, for he was worn out and had to sleep. He had been walking 5 days. "Are you of the dream time or of the world time?"
"Of the world time."
"Come along with me, then." The old man got up promptly and led Selvar up the wandering path out of the willow grove into drier, darker regions of oak and thorn. "I took you for a god, and it seemed to me I had seen you before, perhaps in dream."
"Not in the world time. I come from Sornal. I have never been here before."
"This town is Kadast. I am Koro Mena of the White Thorn."
"Selvar is my name, of the Ash."
"There are Ash people among us, both men and women. Also your marriage clans, Birch and Holly. But you don't come looking for a wife, do you?"
"My wife is dead."
They came to the men's lodge, on high ground in a stand of young oaks. They stooped and crawled through the entrance. Inside in the firelight, the old man stood up, but Selvar stayed crouched on hands and knees, unable to rise. Now that help and comfort was at hand, his body, which he had forced too far, would not go farther. He lay down and the eyes closed, and Selvar slipped with relief and gratitude into the great darkness. The men of the lodge of Kadast looked after him, and their healer came to tend the wound in his right arm. In the night, Koro Mena and the healer Torber sat by the fire. Most of the other men were with their wives that night. There were only a couple of young prentice dreamers over on the benches, and they had both gone fast asleep.
"I don't know what would give a man such scars as he has on his face, and much less such a wound as that in his arm. A very queer wound."
"It's a queer engine he wore on his belt. I put it under his bench. It looks like polished iron, but not like the handiwork of men."
Koro Mena felt fear press upon him and slipped into dream to find the reason for the fear, for he was an old man and long adept. In the dream, the giants walked. Their dry, scaly limbs were swathed in cloths. Their eyes were little and light, like tin beads. Behind them crawled huge, moving things made of polished iron. The trees fell down in front of them. Out from among the falling trees, a man ran, crying aloud with blood on his mouth. The path he ran on was the door path of the lodge of Kadast. Koro Mena slid out of the dream.
"He came overseas straight from Sornal, or else came afoot from the coast of our own land. The giants are in both those places, travelers say."
He dreamed sometimes, being very old and not so strong as he had been, as he slipped off to sleep for a while. Day broke, noon passed. Outside the lodge, a hunting party went out. Children chirped. Women talked in voices like running water. A drier voice called Koromena from the door. He crawled out into the evening sunlight. His sister stood outside, looking stern.
Has the stranger waked up, Koro?
Not yet. Torber's looking after him.
We must hear his story.
No doubt he'll wake soon.
Ibor Dendep frowned. Headwoman of Kadist, she was anxious for her people, but she did not want to ask that a hurt man be disturbed, nor to offend the dreamers by insisting on her right to enter their lodge.
Can't you wake him, Koro? What if he is being pursued?
He could not run his sister's emotions on the same rein with his own, yet he felt them. Her anxiety bit him.
If Torber permits, I will.
Try to learn his news quickly. I wish he was a woman and would talk sense.
The stranger had roused himself and lay feverish in the half-dark of the lodge. The undrained dreams of illness moved in his eyes. He sat up, however, and spoke with control. As he listened, Koromena's bones seemed to shrink within him, trying to hide from his terrible story, this new thing.
I was Selver Thali when I lived in Eshreth in Sornal. My city was destroyed by the humans when they cut down the trees in that region. I was one of those made to serve them with my wife, Thali. She was raped by one of them and died. I attacked the human that killed her. He would have killed me then, but another of them saved me and set me free. I left Sornal, where no town is safe from the humans now, and came here to the North Isle and lived on the coast in the Red Groves. There, presently, the humans came and began to cut down the world. They destroyed a city there, Penle. They caught 100 of the men and women and made them serve them and live in the pen. I was not caught. I lived with others who had escaped from Penle in the bogland north. Sometimes at night, I went among the people in the humans' pens. They told me that one was there, that one whom I had tried to kill. I thought at first to try again, or else to set the people in the pen free. But all the time I watched the trees fall and saw the world cut open and left to rot. The men might have escaped, but the women were locked in more safely and could not, and were beginning to die. I talked with the people hiding there in the boglands. We were all very frightened and very angry, and had no way to let our fear and anger free. So at last, after long talking and long dreaming, and the making of a plan, we went in daylight and killed the humans with arrows and hunting lances, and burned their city and their engines. We left nothing, but that one had gone away. He came back alone. I sang over him and let him go. Then a flying ship came from Sornal and hunted us in the forest, but found nobody. So they set fire to the forest, but it rained, and they did little harm. Most of the people freed from the pens, and the others have gone farther north and east toward the Halla Hills, for we were afraid many humans might come hunting us. I went alone. The humans know me, you see. They know my face, and this frightens me, and those I stay with.
What is your wound?
That one. He shot me with their kind of weapon. I sang him down and let him go.
Alone you downed a giant?
Not alone, with 3 hunters and with his weapon in my hand.
What you tell us is very black, and the road goes down. Are you a dreamer of your lodge?
I was. There's no lodge of Eshreth anymore.
That's all one. We speak the old tongue together. Among the willows of Asta, you first spoke to me, calling me Lord Dreamer. So I am. Do you dream, Selver?
Not well.
Do you hold the dream in your hands?
Yes.
Do you weave and shape, direct and follow? Start and cease at will?
Sometimes,
not always.
Can you walk the road your dream goes?
Sometimes.
Sometimes I am afraid to.
Who is not? It is not altogether bad with you, Selver.
No, it is altogether bad. There's nothing good left.
Will the giants, the humans you call them, will they follow your trail, Selver?
I left no trail. No one has seen me for 6 days. That's not the danger.
You don't see the danger. How can you see it?
You haven't done what I did. You have never dreamed of it, making 200 people die.
They will not follow me, but they may follow us all, hunt us as hunters drive conies.
That is the danger, that they may try to kill us all men.
Lie down.
No, I'm not raving. This is true fact and dream. There were 200 humans, and they are dead. We kill them as if they were not men. So will they not turn and do the same? They have killed us by ones. Now they will kill us as they kill the trees by hundreds and hundreds.
Be still. Such things happen in the fever dream, Selver. They do not happen in the world.
The world is always new, however old its roots. Selver, how is it with these creatures, then? They look like men and talk like men. Are they not men?
I don't know. Do men kill men except in madness? Does any beast kill its own kind? Only the insects. These humans kill us as lightly as we kill snakes. The ones who taught me said that they kill one another in quarrels and also in groups like ants fighting. I haven't seen that. But I know they don't spare one who asks life. There is a wish in them to kill, and therefore I saw fit to put them to death.
And all men's dreams will be changed. They will never be the same again. I shall never walk again that path I came with you yesterday, the way up from the willow grove that I've walked on all my life. It is changed. You have walked on it, and it is utterly changed. Before this day, the thing we had to do was the right thing to do. The way we had to go was the right way and led us home. Where is our home now? For you've done what you had to do, and it was not right. You have killed men. I saw them 5 years ago when they came in a flying ship. I hid and watched the giants, 6 of them, and saw them speak and look at rocks and plants and cook food. They are men, but you have lived among them. Tell me, Selver, do they dream?
As children do, in sleep.
They have no training?
No. Sometimes they talk of their dreams. The healers try to use them in healing, but none of them are trained or have any skill in dreaming. Lyubov, who taught me, understood me when I showed him how to dream. And yet even so, he called the world time real and the dream time unreal, as if that were the difference between them.
You have done what you had to do.
His eyes met Selber's across shadows. The desperate tension lessened in Selber's face. He lay back without saying more. In a little while, he was asleep.
He's a god, but not like the others. Not like the pursuer, nor the aspen leaf woman who walks in the forest of dreams. He is not the gatekeeper, nor the lyre player, nor the carver, nor the hunter, though he comes in the world time like them. We may have dreamed of Selver these last few years, but we shall no longer, for he has left the dream time. In the forest, through the forest he comes, where leaves fall, where trees fall, a god that knows death. A god that kills and is not himself reborn.
The headwoman listened to Koromene's reports and prophecies and acted. She put the town of Kadist on alert, making sure that each family was ready to move out with some food packed and litters ready for the old and ill. She sent young women scouting south and east for news of the humans.
She kept one armed hunting group always around town, though the others went out as usual every night. And when Selver grew stronger, she insisted that he come out of the lodge and tell his story, how the humans killed and enslaved people in Sornol and cut down the forests. She forced women and undreaming men who did not understand these things to listen again until they understood and were frightened. For Ibor Dendep was a practical woman. When a great dreamer, her brother, told her that Selver was a god, a changer, a bridge between realities, she believed and acted. It was the dreamer's responsibility to be careful, to be certain that his judgment was true. Her responsibility was then to take that judgment and act upon it. He saw what must be done. She saw that it was done. So the headwoman sent out her young runners, and the headwomen in other towns listened and sent out their runners. The killing and the name of Selver went over North Island and oversea to the other lands, from voice to voice or in writing, not very fast, for the forest people had no quicker messengers than footrunners, yet fast enough. They were not all one people on the 40 lands of the world. There were more languages than lands, and each with a different dialect for every town that spoke it. There were infinite ramifications of customs. Physical types differed on each of the 5 great lands. The people of Sornol were tall and pale and great traders. The people of Raishwell were short, and many had black fur, and they ate monkeys, and so on and on. But the climate varied little, and the forest little, and the sea not at all. In all the 40 lands, women ran the cities and towns, and almost every town had a men's lodge. Within the lodges, the dreamers spoke an old tongue, and this varied little from land to land. It was rarely learned by women or by men who remained hunters, fishers, builders, those who dreamed only small dreams outside the lodge. As most writing was in this lodge tongue, when headwomen sent fleet girls carrying messages, the letters went from lodge to lodge, and so were interpreted by the dreamers to the old women, as were other documents, rumors, myths, and dreams. But it was always the old women's choice whether to believe or not. Ibor Dendep hummed as she worked. Her thin hands, their silky green down, silvered with age, worked black fern stems in and out. She sang a song about gathering ferns, a girl's song. The birch grove was more or less in the center of the town of Kadist. 8 paths led away from it, winding narrowly off among trees. There was a whiff of wood smoke in the air. Where the branches were thin at the south edge of the grove, you could see smoke rise from a chimney, like a bit of blue yarn unraveling among the leaves. If you looked closely among the live oaks and other trees, you would find house roofs sticking up a couple of feet above ground, between 100 and 200 of them. It was very hard to count. The timber houses were 3/4 sunk, fitted in among tree roots like badgers' sets. The beam roofs were mounded over with a thatch of small branches. They were insulating, waterproof, almost invisible. The forest and the community of 800 people went about their business all around the birch grove where Ibor Dendep sat making a basket of fern. There was more people noise than usual, for 50 or 60 strangers, young men and women mostly, had come drifting in these last few days, drawn by Selver's presence. Some were from other cities of the north. Some were those who had done the killing with him. They had followed rumor here to follow him. Yet the voices calling here and there and the babble of women bathing or children playing down by the stream were not so loud as the morning bird song and insect drone and noise of the living forest of which the town was one element. A girl came quickly, a young huntress, the color of the pale birch.
"Word of mouth from the southern coast, Mother. The runners at the women's lodge."
"Send her here when she's eaten. Shh, Tolbar, can't you see he's asleep?"
The girl stooped to pick up a large leaf of wild tobacco and laid it lightly over Selber's eyes, on which a shaft of the steepening bright sunlight had fallen. He lay with his hands half open and his scarred, damaged face turned upward, vulnerable and foolish. A great dreamer gone to sleep like a child. But it was the girl's face that Ibor Dendep watched. It shone in that uneasy shade with pity and terror, with adoration. Tolbar darted away. Presently, 2 of the old women came with the messenger, moving in single file along the sun-flecked path. Ibor Dendep raised her hand, enjoining silence. Selver, struggling with a sleep dream beyond his control, cried out as if in great fear and woke. He went to drink from the stream. When he came back, he was followed by 6 or 7 of those who always followed him. The headwoman put down her half-finished work.
"Now be welcome, runner, and speak."
"I come from Trithat. My words come from Sorbron Deva. Before that, from Sailors of the Strait.
before that from Brotir in Sornal. They are for the hearing of all Kaddist, but they are to be spoken to the man called Selvar, who was born of the ash in Eshreth. Here are the words. There are new giants in the great city of the giants in Sornal, and many of these new ones are females. The yellow ship of fire goes up and down at the place that was called Peha. It is known in Sornal that Selvar of Eshreth burned the city of the giants at Kel-Medeva. The great dreamers of the exiles in Brotir have dreamed giants more numerous than the trees of the 40 lands. These are all the words of the message I bear. There was one called Lyubov. I have spoken of him to Koromenna, but not to you. When that one was killing me, it was Lyubov who saved me. It was Lyubov who healed me and set me free. He wanted to know about us, so I would tell him what he asked, and he too would tell me what I asked. Once I asked how his race could survive, having so few women. He said that in the place where they come from, half the race is women, but the men would not bring women to the 40 lands until they had made a place ready for them.
Until the men make a fit place for the women? Well, they may have quite a wait. They make the forest into a dry beach, and call that making things ready for the women? They should have sent the women first. They are backward, Selvar. They are insane.
A people can't be insane.
But they only dream and sleep, you said. If they want to dream waking, they take poison so that their dreams go out of control, you said. How can people be any madder? They don't know the dream time from the world time any more than a baby does. Maybe when they kill a tree, they think it will come alive again.
No, they understand death very well. Certainly they don't see as we do, but they know more and understand more about certain things than we do. Lyubov mostly understood what I told him. Much of what he told me I couldn't understand. It wasn't the language that kept me from understanding. I know his tongue, and he learned ours. Yet there were things he said I could never understand. He said the humans were from outside the forest. That's quite clear. He said they want the forest, the trees for wood, the land to plant grass on. That, too, is clear to those of us who've seen them cutting down the world. He said the humans are men like us, that we're indeed related, as close kin, maybe, as the red deer to the gray buck. It is clear that they want our forests for themselves. They are twice our stature. They have weapons that outshoot ours by far, and fire throwers and flying ships. Now they have brought more women and will have children. There are maybe 2,000, maybe 3,000 of them here now, mostly in Sornal. But if we wait a lifetime or two, their numbers will double and redouble. They kill men and women. They do not spare those who ask life. They cannot sing in contest. They have left their roots behind them. Perhaps in this other forest from which they came, this forest with no trees. So they take poison to let loose the dreams in them, but it only makes them drunk or sick. No one can say certain whether they're men or not men, whether they're sane or insane, but that does not matter. They must be made to leave the forest because they are dangerous. If they will not go, they must be burned out of the lands. If we wait, it is we that will be smoked out and burned. Head woman of Kaddest, hear me. It's time, I think, that I go back to my own land, to those that are in exile and those that are enslaved. Tell any people who dream of a city burning to come after me to Brotir. He bowed to Ibor Dendep and left the birch grove, still walking lame, his arm bandaged. Yet there was a quickness to his walk, a poise to his head that made him seem more whole than other men. The young people followed quietly after him.
Who is he?
The man to whom your message came, Selvar of Eshreth, a god among us. Tell your people in Trithat of him. The son of Forest Fire, the brother of the murdered. He is the one who is not reborn. Now go on, all of you, go on to the lodge. See who'll be going with Selvar. See about food for them to carry. Let me be a while. I'm as full of foreboding as a stupid old man. I must dream.
Coromena went with Selvar that night as far as the place where they first met, under the copper willows by the stream. Many people were following Selvar south, some 60 in all, as great a troop as most people had ever seen on the move at once. They would cause great stir and thus gather many more to them on their way to the sea crossing to Sornal. Selvar had claimed his dreamer's privilege of solitude for this one night. He was setting off alone. His followers would catch up in the morning. He would have little time for the slow and deep running of the great dreams.
Here we met, and here we part. This will be called Selvar's Grove, no doubt, by the people who walk our paths hereafter. You are surer of me than I am. Yes, I'm sure, Selvar. I was well taught in dreaming, and then I'm old. I dream very little for myself anymore. Why should I? Little is new to me. I'm an old hollow tree. Only the roots live. And so I dream only what all men dream. I have no visions and no wishes. I see what is. I see the fruit ripening on the branch. 4 years it has been ripening, that fruit of the deep-planted tree. We have all been afraid for 4 years, even we who live far from the human cities and have only glimpsed them from hiding or seen their ships fly over or looked at the dead places where they cut down the world. We are all afraid. Children wake from sleep crying of giants. Women will not go far on their trading journeys. Men in the lodges cannot sing. The fruit of fear is ripening, and I see you gather it. All that we fear to know you have seen, you have known. Exile, shame, pain, the roof and walls of the world fallen, the mother dead in misery, the children untaught. This is a new time for the world, a bad time, and you have suffered it all. You have gone farthest, and at the end of the black path there grows the tree where the fruit ripens. Now, Selvar, you gather it, and the world changes wholly. When a man holds in his hand the fruit of that tree whose roots are deeper than the forest, men will know it. They will know you as we did. It doesn't take an old man or a great dreamer to recognize a god. Where you go, fire burns. But listen, Selvar. This is what I see that perhaps others do not. This is why I have loved you. I dreamed of you before we met here. You were walking on a path, and behind you, the young trees grew up, oak and birch, willow and holly, white flowering ash, all the roof and walls of the world forever renewed. Now farewell, dear God and son. Go safely.
The night darkened as Selvar went, until even his night-seeing eye saw nothing but masses and plains of black. It began to rain. He had gone only a few miles from Cadist when he must either light a torch or halt. He chose to halt, and groping found a place among the roots of a great chestnut tree. There he sat, his back against the broad, twisting bole that seemed to hold a little warmth in it still. The fine rain, falling unseen in darkness, pattered on the leaves overhead, on his arms and neck and head protected by their thick, silky hair, on the earth and ferns and undergrowth nearby, on all the leaves of the forest, near and far. Selvar sat as quiet as the gray owl on a branch above him, unsleeping, his eyes wide open in the rainy dark.